tales full of sadness and woe. But I believe you smile again. You see, I know the pain you're feeling, 'cause I was there just like you. Where it's leading. Hold on.
There's nothing standing in your way. You can
be strong.
So show the world what you can do and just
walk on.
Don't ever doubt the inner voice in you.
Life's long.
Like you'll be outcast. Sometimes it's better to be alone than to be with the bad crowd. Preserve your mind and feed it. Nourish what it is you have inside. Use it in the right way.
Good night to all of our listeners. You are tuned in to Iran Radio Broadcasting from Tehran. Glad you could join us. I'm your host for the next hour. We start off this hour's programs with Youth Station, a program all about young people covering topics all related to youth. After that, we have Israel Watch. The program critically analyses Zionist media reports about current events and issues in the West Asia region. And our final program this hour is for humanity, a variety of subjects from the Holy Quran, which predominantly tend to be social issues, are presented in this program. Stay with us for the next hour.
Start.
Movement.
Speak.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamidi.
Islamidi.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to this episode of Youth Station. My name is Muhammad and I am here with Sister...
This is Nahid, having the honor of being with you.
Assalamu alaikum, Sister Nahid.
So
it's a very interesting topic today and I'll begin this with this statement. If you don't like it, throw it away. If you see that someone is taunting you, delete them. Just block the page. Don't fix relationship. It's not fixable, right? This is something that we youths are very much acquainted with. Yeah, the throwaway culture. And I think this is because we have abundance of, you know, consumables with us. And it's very cheap for us. It's not like before whereby our parents or our grandparents would have had to even bring drinkable water. They had to go through so many difficulties, so many struggles to meet the standard of the family. But now, everything is ready. Everything is industrialized. So it's so cheap that if something goes bad, the screen of the phone, keyboard of your laptop, I don't know, lace of your shoes, whatever the case is, throw it away. You can easily get another one. You can easily get a new one. You can easily get a better one. This culture, Sister Nahi, how much is it prevalent amongst us and how good is it or how bad is it?
As a Gen Z member, I think this is happening between us. We are doing this. We are removing the things that are bothering us or we feel like they are standing on our way to improvement. But the reason for it, I mean, you were mentioning that because everything is well prepared for us, we have everything available. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's because of this. I feel it's not that bad either. I mean, the young people are working. They're mm-hmm. working to get what they want. They are working hard for their dreams, even harder than before. Mm-hmm. In the time of our parents, it was like finding a job, then starting a family, and everything was...
And becoming stable.
Yeah, and then...
And now it's so many ups and downs.
Yeah, and then now you're working from morning to night, but still, you cannot find
make
any...
Make men's eat, yeah.
Yeah, any places that you feel like, okay, I'm safe here. I don't have to work anymore. I don't have to be worried anymore. Mm-hmm. So young people are working. They are even working more than before. But this ideology, this mindset, I really like it. I mean, what is wrong with this? That these young people, these groups of society learn that if something is hurting them, okay, remove it. You don't have to be highlighting it and thinking.
So you think it's healthy?
Yeah.
You think it's healthy to have this mindset that, okay, if something's you find bad, just throw it away.
I believe that you
don't
have.
What if you have that opportunity? What if you have that opportunity to fix it? What if you know that this is fixable?
So I will fix it. It's not that I'm closing my eyes and just going for removing everything from my surroundings.
You know where the conflict really arises? It's when, especially when there is this thing called time management, right? And you're always taunted by everyone around you. Manage your time, manage your time.
Be faster.
Now, not only be faster, but, you know, spend time where it's worth it, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
What if, for example, you can fix something? Like, for example, recently my water heater broke, right? And I know that I can fix it. But with the tools I have and the knowledge I have, I might fix it within 3, 4, 5 hours. But I can fix it, right? I have to go buy the parts, fix it, open the nuts, open the screws, you know, change, do the servicing, and then close it back up. It might probably... And I know that if I call someone, a technician,
right.
He might do it within an hour or even less, right?
Right.
Which one would I go for? Go for the technician or fix it myself? Or even worse, let me make the scenario much more precise. I know that if I go 5 hours, I can make maybe, let's say, an X amount of money, right? If I work for five
exactly.
hours. Yeah, this is, I think, the most conflicting issue that we are facing.
Yeah.
In 5 hours, I can make X amount of money. Right? That means I can buy a completely new water heater. Why should I waste 5 hours in fixing the old one, whereas it's worth it for me to work 5 hours and still get a better one, a newer one, one that is that does not have any problem?
Well, first, I think there is this conception, this understanding of this ideology, at least in my mind. What we mean when we say we can remove things that are bothering us, we don't mean that we have to just be blind, don't consider anything, don't think about the situation, and just, okay, problem, the solution is for it to be removed. So we have to give it a thought. kind of analyze the situation. We don't mean that this generation is not thinking about the situation. What we mean is that sometimes in toxic relationships, in the problematic situations, they don't go for the problems, for the challenges that the younger generations would have gone to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I remember my brother, he's older than me, and he was worried about things and just thinking about them, overthinking them a lot. While me, on the other hand, who was younger than him, I would have just removed that idea, that thing from my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have been bothering myself and just doing this rethinking thing a lot. But in the past, with the previous generations, I think because the opportunities were limited, or I don't know what the reasons were, I haven't experienced their era, but I felt they wanted to be stuck in one place, to fix it completely, to feel like there is no problem anymore, and then continue and move on. They would have stopped and paused their life.
So you believe that there is a criteria to this? There is no yes or no per se for this question,
exactly.
Should we dispose it?
Yeah, it
but there is
credible.
A boundary. There is a boundary you set.
Cutting
off toxic, exactly. So cutting off toxic relationships, you believe it should be cut off.
Yeah.
It's a toxic relationship.
Right.
You can't fix it. Cut it off. Fine. Blocking harmful content. It's a harmful content. What else do you want from it? Block it. Right. Not over investing in every argument online. It's an argument. The guy is not going to accept you. The girl is not going to accept you.
I can't understand those people who spend hours just responding.
Yeah,
to these
but you know that there is no end to this.
Yeah.
You say, I say, you say, I say, you say, there's no end to it. Just finish it off, right? Move on. Instead of hoarding, declutter it. Whatever you have at home and you're not using it, give it away to the charity. Sell it out, whatever you can.
Yeah, maybe
declutter
there are some people who will need it.
Exactly, declutter it. You don't need it, declutter it, yeah? Choose peace over drama. You know, don't avoid such. But this is like the healthy and the good aspects of it. Of the disposable or thinking, right? And I think this is actually very good. And there shouldn't be, you shouldn't reach to a point whereby you say, I can't fix it, and then you say that I have to keep it still. This is, I think, not an acceptable solution.
Yeah, it's not healthy.
The boundary, basically, boundaries are not the same as disposable thinking. You set the boundaries, but this is not disposable thinking. Because you've set boundaries. Now, let's talk about the bad aspects of it, of this mentality that we have in the Gen Zs and the youths of today, maybe after taking a break. So don't go away. We're talking about this disposable thinking and the throwaway culture, but we talked about so many things about it. We said that there are boundaries. We talked about the good things about the boundaries. Let's talk about the other side after we take a break. Don't go away.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back, and we are talking about avoiding things or just keep going with the things that you have or try to fix the problems, be it with the people or with the objects and things. Well, talking about the negative part, I was analyzing the people that I know and the way I myself have been acting in different situations. I know some of the youth today that are, I don't know if you have seen this group, I mean this thinking within the Gen Z members or not, but they want to be alone. They prefer to have their own solitude.
Mm-hmm.
They don't like to be in big groups. There are for sure some of the outgoing ones that
the introverts basically you're talking about.
But many of them like to be alone and prefer their own solitude to just spending time with the others.
Mm-hmm.
And once you ask them, like, why is this? Where is this coming from? I asked my cousin once that, why do you want to be alone? Why don't you want to come to the parties with us? You're just 16 years old. And then his answer was that, what if I come and someone says something and I feel unsafe?
Oh, wow.
So I think one of the reasons, one of the side effects.
It's a very common thing because they feel they feel that they're coming out of the comfort zone.
Yeah, and this fear of confrontation. They are scared, or we sometimes are scared, of just facing the problems, of talking for ourselves, of stating what we think about.
So these boundaries are not necessarily the correct boundaries. Yes,
no.
We talked about the positive stuff, throwing away things that you can't fix,
yeah, right.
Toxic relationships, moving on, you know, moving on from, you know, pointless arguments. But let me challenge you with other titles. Treating people like replaceable apps.
This one
doesn't work. I'll move on to the
this
next
one. This is not healthy.
So this is also, this also stems from the same disposable culture, but this is a negative aspect
of
it.
Right.
You treat people as if he's not there, if she's not there.
We can't find them again. Like, okay, my parents. How am I going to just change them with other ones?
No, I can't tell you how many youths have seen who see parents as like that. Well, they see, okay, it was their responsibility to bring me up to this point.
This is unbelievably sad.
Yeah, it is unbelievable. To be honest, you see, the culture is, especially for youths living in the West, the culture is moving on so fast.
With the materialistic world.
Being self-centric, being individualistic, and being extremely material, everything has to come with a benefit with it. With a price. And when no longer you see the benefit in that, there is no more appreciation. So yes, your parents, as long as they can benefit you, there is appreciation and there is value. But then once the point they reach, and that's why in the UK that they're now opening the Ministry of Loneliness, because there's so many elderly. They have kids. They had kids. They grew up. They brought up kids, but their kids are no longer looking. They probably don't even have them in the contact list
anymore.
Because
they couldn't see the benefits, probably.
Yeah, so they just throw away the parents, right? Replace them, like just like replacing apps. If this doesn't work, I'll use the other one.
Sad,
right?
And depressing.
So this is the dark side of disposable thinking. Let me challenge you with another one. Avoiding all discomfort to repair. You know you can repair this, but then you don't feel comfortable. You can just change it. I can clearly relate to so many of my friends who have an abundance of clothes, an abundance of shoes.
And they keep them?
They keep them even, like for example, a friend of mine, a part of his clothes was torn in front of me. And then I was like, it's not something visible. You can easily just stitch it and repair it. Yeah, it's not going to take like, you know, hours from you, probably a few minutes. We were traveling together and all of a sudden he's like, this doesn't look presentable. Takes his shirts off, throws it in the bin and buys another one right there and then. And I was wordless because I was like, how could... The one aspect of it is being luxurious, having so much abundance of wealth that you can easily buy and move on. That's one aspect of it. And many people don't have that, you know, don't have that privilege, but have that wish and have that need in their inner self that, oh, I need to keep replacing, but they can't do it. Now, this is also very toxic.
And it's not accepted.
It's
like
not acceptable,
Islam,
exactly.
We are not allowed to think like this, even with our materials, even with the things around us. We're not allowed to just have this throw away ideology and throw away everything that we feel, okay, there's one little problem, there is no way I can fix it.
If you can fix it, fix it. Like, this is the boundary of it. As long as you can fix it, then fix it. Even if it requires that you ask someone's help to fix that thing, ask, it's fine. There is no problem in that. And how many times that, you know, the same example of the water heater, I did spend 5 hours, by the way, fixing it, and probably even more than 5 hours, because...
But it's worth it.
It was worth it, not because it was fixed, because I learned so much things.
Yeah.
I know that tomorrow, if the sparker doesn't work, if the pump doesn't work, I know exactly what's the problem.
And
I know exactly how to fix it.
And we say we are the modern citizens, so if we say that I'm learning everywhere, I'm going for my improvements,
exactly.
So this is the opportunity, go for it.
Yeah, and this is an opportunity that... not everyone gets. For example, not everyone's water heater is broken for them to go fix it. Yours is broken. You have that opportunity. For you to learn how to fix, you need to go pay an agency who can open up water heaters for you and be like, this is you know, something's wrong with it. Come diagnose it, and then they're going to teach you. But this is, you're getting it for free. Look at it as an opportunity. And I think I learned so much fixing that thing that I think that was not possible without, you know, me doing, if I would have called a technician to fix it quickly.
Yeah, now that you were talking about this experience, I was thinking of the long-term results of keeping this mindset. I mean, if there was a young person who would have just, okay, thought of buying something new and not would have thought of repairing it and going for fixing the thing. So the long-term result would be even horrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's so much more to be said. I can challenge this disposable ideology, this disposable thinking with so many more cases. And I think we can we'll probably discuss this in another episode.
Yeah, for sure.
There's so much more to be said, but too much less time to consider. So, inshallah, in another episode, we will discuss more about this disposable culture. And until then, we bid you farewell with Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about
this. We'll discuss that, inshallah, in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillah, Rabbil Alameen. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum. Wassalamu alaikum. Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Thank you for joining us. Among the topics addressed by Hebrew media were the second phase of the Gaza Agreement, Iran and the situation on the Lebanese front, as well as Syria. We will discuss these topics further with Mr. Ali Murad, writer and political researcher, joining us here in the studio. Hello and welcome, Mr.
Thank
Ali.
Thank you very much.
Attention is now turning to the nature of the international forces planned to be formed as per the second phase of the Gaza Agreement. Hebrew media revealed that Italy is currently holding contacts with the Americans and other parties to send its forces to participate in this force. It appears that the international force in Gaza is going to be similar to the UNIFIL force in South Lebanon, where the greatest troop contribution will be from Europe, with the mandate of being peacekeeping, but as opposing to disarmament.
Well, first of all, we have to take into consideration that the UN resolution, the last resolution that was issued by the UN Security Council, does not give the authorities of this force to be deployed in Gaza to use force.
Yes.
Because they needed a seventh chapter vote, which didn't happen with the resolution 2803. So I think what we are listening to, what they are claiming in the Zionist media, I think that they are trying to express that it's going to be soon, and I think it's going to take more time, because even Italy and other European countries are not willing to deploy their forces inside Gaza without guarantees. They need guarantees, security guarantees, that the Palestinian resistance factions would not attack those forces, because you cannot talk about peacekeeping.
So the second phase of the agreement will take more time, you're saying, to
yes,
be implemented?
Yes, because there's a quagmire here for Trump. Trump wants Turkey to send forces into Gaza. Benjamin Netanyahu is still refusing this. The Americans know well that the Turkish forces are to be accepted by Hamas and other resistance fighters inside the Gaza Strip. But in the face of the, you know, the refusal from Benjamin Netanyahu, that's why it's taking more time. I think that Trump is going to oblige Netanyahu in the end to accept that Turkey would send forces into inside Gaza Strip, because this is the only
option. The European forces are not interested in sending their troops meanwhile?
They are not interested because they don't have security guarantees, so that they won't be attacked.
Turkey will send?
Turkey, they have those security guarantees, I think, because we know the relations between Hamas and Turkey and other resistance movements. You cannot talk about peacekeeping mission and at the same time a disarmament mission.
Exactly.
It's going to act in a hostile way against the resistance, which would invite a retaliation by the resistance fighters. That's why I think Turkey would be accepted by the Palestinians.
But also it's a matter of dispute between the U.S. and Israel. Meanwhile, this topic received widespread attention on Israeli social media. Let's listen.
Michelle, the Palestinians succeeded in extorting the entire world to rebuild their terrorist state in the Gaza Strip. Dudi, at the ambassador's conference, Netanyahu affirmed the transition to the stage of disarmament in Gaza and readiness to test the international force. But this will not happen except with Trump's consent. David Gellerman, Trump manages Netanyahu like a puppet, while he continues to talk about absolute victory that produced 35,000 fighters still in Gaza, while Hezbollah gains more strength and Iran renews its missile and nuclear stockpiles.
Israeli calls for escalation against Iran, meanwhile, continue as analysts emphasize that drastic action must be taken against what they described as an existential threat posed by the Islamic Republic. Do you think that Israel and the U.S. see eye on eye concerning Iran? Because obviously, according to this report, Trump is saying that he's more focused, that's what they're trying to describe, he's more focused on Gaza, Syria, Lebanon, while Israel constantly, and most of the reports that we actually observe, they're always speaking about Iran.
I think that they are not on the same page here, because take a look to the reaction of Donald Trump right after the aggression, the U.S. aggression on the Iranian nuclear reactors.
Mm-hmm.
He was portraying this aggression as if it was the first and the last attack on Iranian facilities that threaten the Zionist entity. It's like he was telling the Israelis that I have done it for you, and it's going to be this time and
one time shot.
Of course, the Israelis are not satisfied with the outcomes of the aggression, the 12 days aggression on Iran,
and that's why they constantly speak about possible attacks and possible war.
Exactly. When they talk about the cards, they had cards, tough cards. They confess that it took them years to build on those strong cards, and they used them, and they failed actually to reach their goal. Their ultimate goal was to oust the regime. The regime would fall inside Iran.
Yes.
And that's why they expressed it openly during the first 3 or 4 days of the aggression. I think Trump now is more interested to succeed in Gaza, because it's his reputation, his image that is at stake, because he personally took it with his chest that he is going to succeed in Gaza. He's going to prevent the reasons that would put them again into a continuous war, a wide-scale war, regional war that has no end.
And presented himself as a peacemaker.
That's why he is interested now in satisfying the demands made by his popular base, MAGA. They are pressing Trump that he has to end this.
Yes, and even his national security, of course, does not show any desire for war in the Middle East. However, here the major question concerning this report, if Israel has a different eye on what's happening inside Iran. Will the Americans still refuse to indulge in any war as long as you're saying that Trump is somewhere else?
I think that the Americans now, they are in charge of everything that has to deal with aggressions, whether in Gaza, whether in Lebanon, whether in Syria, and of course in Iran.
Yes.
We are witnessing now how the Americans are managing all the activities now taking place in the region. And I believe personally that the Americans have been doing this since 2 years. But now, as they succeeded in forcing Benjamin Netanyahu to end, to reach a ceasefire in Gaza, they want to prevent any reasons that would make Benjamin Netanyahu come again and say we need to go again in Lebanon or in Gaza or whether in Iran. That's why I think
yes.
Americans are keen now to solve some issues regarding the making this buffer zones mm-hmm. around the Zionist entity, to tell the Zionists that we ensured
you are protected and no need to launch more wars.
You ensured your security.
Okay.
You have no excuses anymore for more wars.
Okay. In the same context, one Israeli commentator said that Iran has come to possess major military and missile capabilities that threaten the Israeli entity, and that war against it is the way to prevent this threat. Isn't it a sign that Israel's previous war on Iran was not a success when the assessment here, according to this report, that if another war to be launched, then we can analyze that Iran is ready for this war? That means the first round of war was not successful. However, they were bragging that it was.
Well, first of all, we have to take into consideration that the Israel lobby in the United States is putting pressure on the U.S. administration to adopt the vision that the job is not finished, that we have to go for a second stage of war against Iran. And they are claiming that Iran is possessing more armaments and missiles capabilities, and they are on the verge of waging the second stage. I think this is nonsense, because Iran has made it clearly that they are on the defense side.
Yes.
Situation here. They are defending their soils, their sovereignty, and at the same time, they are still committed in supporting resistance movements in the region. The Trump administration here is listening to two sides, the neocons and the MAGA. The MAGA is telling Trump that what has been done is more than sufficient. You cannot go into war again with Iran. We have more important things to do,
okay.
More priorities for our own national security. In another war in Iran, it's going to be a MIGA, make Israel great again. They are pressuring Trump that you cannot go into another war because it's not in the interest of our own national security.
Mm-hmm.
The neocons and the Likudists, they are trying to tell Trump that
even Trump's advisors?
Yes, exactly, because his advisors are split.
Yes.
He has Marco Rubio, he has Mike Waltz, he has another second or third class officials in his administration. They are they are adopting the vision of Benjamin Netanyahu that we have to go again into war. But the MAGA officials, and led by J.D. Vance, they are telling Trump openly that we cannot do this anymore because we have our own national security strategy, we have our own priorities, because Benjamin Netanyahu wants continuous, endless wars. We cannot follow him on everything. We have followed him during last June. We are not willing to do this again.
Okay, who would he listen to?
I think Trump made some signs that he is now willing to listen to Mega? What MAGA are telling him, because we are now into primaries, preparing for the midterms in less than a year. So he has to...
maybe, you know, in an exchange of what Rubio wants in Venezuela.
Well, in Venezuela, a regime change in Venezuela might be easier. We have to make it clear that MAGA, they are not against the war for, you know, moral reasons.
Yes.
They are against the war for economic reasons.
You're saying they have more important files on their agenda.
Yes, and they, if there is something in front of them and they assess that they can win without any costs, they can go for it. They would go for it, as the, what is portrayed with Venezuela. But with Iran, they know that there would be an aftermath that would hurt their national interests in the region. They know it's not going to be a short war if they listen to Benjamin Netanyahu, because Benjamin Netanyahu wants an all-out war.
Okay.
It's going to be a long war. That's why they don't want it.
Yes.
For economic reasons.
Moving to the ongoing threats against Lebanon, where Israeli commentators underscore the necessity of disarming Hezbollah, even if this requires operations against the Lebanese army. What do you make out of what was said targeting the Lebanese army?
Well, this reflects how certain elements in the Israeli government and in the military establishment, they are still... you know, daydreaming about another invasion of Lebanon. They are not satisfied. They want more. And we know that when, in the case of Lebanon, the more the Lebanese government is expressing its willingness to give more to the Americans and the Israelis at the end.
Concerning negotiations.
Yes, the more the Israelis are going to be more demanding. That's the situation here, because they are not satisfied with the Lebanese army stance here. And we know that the Likudist Israel lobby in Washington, they presented through some congressmen a repeal of the National Defense Authorization Act, mm-hmm. 2026. There is a section that states openly that the aid given by the U.S. to the Lebanese army is going to be in the face of a some kind of mechanism to assess whether the Lebanese army did something with regards to the disarmament of Hezbollah or not. If they assess that the Lebanese army didn't do this, they are going to stop the aid to the Lebanese army.
Mm-hmm.
This is a precedent about what the Israelis are planning for Lebanon. They don't care. I think they are splitting the negotiations path and the aggression, their intentions toward Lebanon.
Mm-hmm.
But I still assess my personal opinion that the Americans are not going to let the Israelis wage a new expanded war against Lebanon that includes incursions inside Lebanon to maximize the areas that they occupy in South Lebanon.
Mm-hmm.
Up to now, the stance, the official stance of the Lebanese government as well as the resistance, they are openly saying that we have done what is required from our side. There are no resistance actions
yes.
to the southern part of the Litani River.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the Israelis cannot claim that we have not committed to the ceasefire agreement.
Okay.
We are committed to the ceasefire agreement. That's why we listened from Tom Barwak, the U.S. envoy to the region, that we may take into consideration that disarming Hezbollah is going to be impossible.
Okay.
That's why they are assessing another way. They are talking about freezing the weapons,
yes.
the heavy artillery with the resistance.
Okay. 1 year after the fall of Assad's regime in Syria and the rise of al-Julani to power there, Israeli territorial incursions territory continues to escalate, with Hebrew media pointing to real risk threatening al-Julani and his regime. Do you think that these comments are related to the recent events in Beijing?
I think that the Israelis are still assessing, pushing Syria into partitioning. They have been talking about assassinating, a possible plan to assassinate al-Julani. They are still seriously assessing that their interest is in a partition Syria.
Okay.
That's why when they talk about the stability in Syria, we all know there is no stability in Syria.
Yes.
It's like an excuse for what they are going to do in the southern part of Syria, exactly.
Okay, Mr. Ali Murad, writer and political researcher. Unfortunately, our time is up. Thank you very much for joining us in today's episode.
The earth and the heavens begin to sing. The angels celebrate the birth of a king. A king who outshines the stars of the night. A beacon of hope. You guide us with your blessings of God upon you is my prayer. The earth and the heavens begin to sing. This day we celebrate the birth of a king.
ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا
your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except him, and he has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum. This is Hussein, and you're listening to our program for humanity from IRIB English Radio. In this program, we talk about Islamic teachings pertaining to humanity and the values that Islam sees as the great values of a perfect human being. And in a couple of previous episodes, we started covering a very good book in this regard, which is titled A 250-Year-Old Man, which is a combination of the lectures delivered by His Eminence Grand Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, covering the biographies and life stories of the Prophet of Islam Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam and great leaders of Muslim community from among his pure progeny. So in the previous episode, we were covering the first chapter, which pertained to the life of the Prophet of Islam. And we were talking about the level of popularity that the Prophet had, even after years of hardship. Maybe we think that, okay, a community that they see a person like the Prophet among themselves would think after a while that he brought difficulties for us from the time that he came. We had wars and difficulties and famines and shortcomings in different ways. But then there's this story that Abu Sufyan, on the eve of the triumphant entrance of the Prophet to Mecca, when he came to the camp of Muslims under the protection of Abbas, the uncle of the Prophet, he saw that even at that moment, Muhammad, according to his account, was extremely popular. His companions were competing to get the drops of the wudu, the ritualistic washing hands and face before the prayer. So he says that I saw the companions of Muhammad competing over getting the drops as the source of blessing. And I realized, and I had seen, he says that I had seen empires of Persia, empires of Romans, and I did not see any such level of popularity among them. And then I realized that with these people that are ready to sacrifice themselves for their leader, we cannot do anything with this person, so we gave up. And tomorrow, when the army of Muslims or the community of Muslims, they entered Mecca, there was no resistance. And I mean, they realized, and pagans of Mecca realized, that they cannot do anything. And it was the full display of mercy from the side of the Prophet that he forgave all of them. According to the laws of the war at that time, they were supposed to be enslaved by Muslims. But Allah, but the Prophet of Islam said that, no, you are free for in the way of Allah. There were some calls, some people from among the army of the Prophet, that they would say, Al-Yawm Yawmul Malhama. Today is the day of the revenge. Remember that you have in the army of Muslims, you have people who lost their loved ones in the battles posed by pagans against them. So they thought, okay, now that we have overcome and we have prevailed, this is the time that we take our revenge. And this happens almost every stage of human history. After the war ends, you have courts of law, okay, like the last one, Nuremberg, courts of law, and people getting to trials, those people, and punishing them. But then, no, the Prophet of Islam did not have any trial for anything. He forgave them all, and that was, and you know, some Orientalists, they try to portray as the Prophet as an aggressive or something like that, but this is completely intentional. I mean, they are very unfair because they don't see these things in the life of the Prophet. Some of them. Okay, we're going to have a break and we come back. Welcome back. This is Hussein, and you're listening to your program for Humanity from IRIB English Radio. In this program, we talk about the characteristics of a perfect human being according to Islamic teaching. And in the first segment, we were talking about the popularity of the Prophet and the concept of Izzah. Now, this is referred to as Izzah, and Quran says, وَلِلَّهِ الْعِزَّةُ وَلِرَسُولِهِ. The true popularity, the true esteem, respect is for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and for the Prophet and the true followers. So we were also talking about the fact that some people, some actually biased historians or people would say that they try to depict the picture of the Prophet of Islam that he got more aggressive as the time went on. Like, for example, the start of his community in Mecca, he was not aggressive, and then he got aggressive when in Medina, and as he went into power, like normally this happens with these leaders. For example, the leaders, as much as they hold control, more power, they become more oppressive, something like this. And they try to apply this pattern in the life history of the Prophet. But this is unfair and unreal because, as I said, you have examples of great levels of forgiveness that the Prophet of Islam actually shows right at the most powerful moments of his life. And that's what makes it very beautiful and unique in human history. Like, one of them was the day that the triumph of Mecca took place. The other is when certain members from among the companions, from among the community of the Prophet ﷺ, in Laylatul Aqaba, there's this story of the night of the narrow pathway. Aqaba means narrow pathway. So the Prophet of Islam was passing through this narrow pathway, which was on the brink of a cliff, and certain people tried to make the camel of the Prophet fall into the cliff. And then Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala informed the Prophet through revelation, and the plot failed. Actually, the assassination attempt failed. So then later on, another companion of the Prophet asked him, okay, did you know him? And the Prophet said, yes, I know all of them. I saw their faces and I knew them even before. But then that companion asked him, why don't you take any measures against them? And he said, I just forgive them. One reason for that is that I don't want other people to see that when Muhammad prevailed, he put sword among his own followers. So you see that this level of forgiveness, that it is not at all like that when I have power, I do whatever I want. And the level of freedom that he would give to the opposition. And the munafiqun of that time, they are the ones that we can call opposition now. They are the opposition. And Abdullah bin Ubay and these people, according to historical accounts, they had the freedom to make fun of the Prophet, to make fun of Muslims, and no one would do any harm to them. Not only that, the Prophet would still give them their share from Baytul Mal, from the money, the financial aid that was distributed among the members of the committee. They received that, and at the same time, they made fun of the Prophet and other Muslims. So, you see, this is the level of the freedom of opposition, and even the plots against the life of the Prophet, he forgave them. So that picture that he got aggressive and oppressive is all but a biased perspective with other goals, with other motives that some people, unfortunately, throughout history tried to depict from the Prophet. Okay, inshallah, we continue the discussion about other elements in the leadership of the Prophet in the next episode. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
It's all I ever wish for. This life is not eternal, but the next will last forever.
Good night to all of our listeners. You are tuned into Iran Radio, broadcasting from Tehran, Iran. Glad you could join us. I'm your host for the next hour. Here are some interesting facts about the Holy Quran. In total, 25 prophets are mentioned in the Holy Quran in different surahs. Prophet Moses, or Musa in Arabic, peace be upon him, is mentioned 136 times in the Holy Quran, making him the most mentioned prophet of all in the Holy Book of Allah. The literal meaning of the word Quran is the which is being read. The word Quran is repeated 70 times in the Book of Allah itself. The month of Ramadan is the only month of the year mentioned in the Holy Quran in verse 185 of chapter Al-Baqarah, second chapter. We start off this hour's programs with our news bulletin. After that, we have Minbar. Our varied radio productions feature will follow. And our final program this hour is Leader's Speech. The program presents an English translation of a selection of the statements and speeches of the Honorable Leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. Stay with us for the next hour.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines: Venezuela has strongly condemned the U.S. seizure of an oil tanker off the country's coast to the Caribbean, calling the move an act of international piracy. The U.S. House of Representatives has advanced the military spending for the next fiscal year that includes hundreds of millions of dollars for Israel. And also in our headlines, renewed clashes between Thailand and Cambodia have entered the fourth day as the two sides continue to trade fire along the border. Welcome, everybody, here in the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is World News. Our top story: Venezuela has strongly condemned the U.S. seizure of an oil tanker off the country's coast.